Sports Radio 1290, CFRW, Winnipeg.
I don't believe what I just saw.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of top-notch hockey talk coming your way here on Sports Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Drew.
Are you mocking already?
No, so soon? Not mocking. Hey.
Loving?
What's
is that loving?
What's the expression?
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery?
Yeah, there you go.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's a very flattering you.
It's a very Drew comment.
He asked me what the expression was. I didn't say the comment.
Good morning, Drew.
Good morning, Richard.
Izzy. Morning, guys.
Yeah. It's interesting fashion choice you got going on there, Richie.
Keeping it real.
Yeah, you definitely are keeping it real there, so we'll leave it at that. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. We have a jam-packed show for you. Coming up at about 9:30 this morning, just before he's about to board a plane back to Boston for Game 6 of the Canucks-Bruins series from the Vancouver province, we're going to be joined by Ben Kuzma. We're going to talk about last night's game. We're going to look forward, see if he's going to be coming back to Vancouver for a Game 7 or not. Top-notch series. Great game yesterday, great pace, everything else. We'll break that game down in its entirety, probably in the first hour of today's program. As well, on today's show, we're very excited to welcome at 10:30 in the morning the new general manager of the Winnipeg Whatevers. Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to join us. We're thrilled to have Kevin on the program. You know, welcome him, introduce him to us, to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and really get deep into some of his philosophies and some of his plans as the general manager of this new franchise. And then at 11:30 this morning, Craig Heisinger is going to be joining us. Rags to riches story, as the saying goes, and we're thrilled to welcome Craig back to the program to really discuss everything associated with his new role as the assistant general manager and executive vice president, or senior vice president, pardon me, and director of hockey operations, and the man with the world's longest title.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, all of your phone calls, tweets, emails, 780-1290 is the phone number. On Twitter, you can search for us at Illegal Curve. Send us your tweets. Good tweets will get read on the air. Bad tweets will be ignored accordingly. And, of course, you can send us an email, info@illegalcurve.com. That way all of us get it. And, you know, for those of you who are tuned in online, listening on your computers, why don't you go join the Illegal Curve chat room, taking place at www.illegalcurve.com. Michael Remus is facilitating that chat. You'll hear from Michael later on in the program, throughout the show, and he'll update us on what's going on our Twitter page and on the chat room and everything else. Gentlemen, we were on for 6 hours last week with the drive to 13 having taken place. First of all, does it seem like it's been longer than 1 week to you guys? Because it seems like that took place about a month ago.
No, it sure does. I mean, to say that the team has been announced as being, you know, that hockey has returned to Winnipeg, and that was within the last 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks ago.
It's amazing.
It's mind-blowing.
I know. It really is, because that day, well, there was... You could really break it down into three, maybe even four huge announcements, Richie. You could break it down to the Tuesday before the actual announcement, when the Stephen Brunt Globe and Mail article was released, and then we rushed down to the studio and did our show and then went to Portage in Maine. Mm-hmm. That was the first big event. Then there was the anticipation leading up to the actual announcement by True North and the NHL. And then there was the announcement on, was it Tuesday or Wednesday, that Craig Heisinger and Kevin Cheveldayoff were going to be, you know, the two right-hand men for Mark Chipman and the management team. So there was three massive days, and then, you know, the fourth will probably be the announcement of the name, which we're not sure exactly when that'll be, but...
Before the draft.
It'll be before the draft.
And the
draft.
That's
all we know.
The draft is 2 weeks yesterday, and actually, great news for Illegal Curve. Ezzy and Kyle, Kosher.
Kyle Kosher, our scouting correspondent on Illegal Curve.
Will be at the draft.
Live in with media credentials on the floor interviewing all the players. And, of course, what you will do as is you'll record all those interviews and we'll either air them live if that's a possibility or we'll just save them and play them the next morning. We're going to be covering the draft from top to bottom in its complete and total entirety in the next couple of weeks once the finals get done. And, you know, my impression is that we're going to get a name announcement sometime between June 21st, the Board of Governors meeting, and the draft on the Friday of June 24th.
Makes sense.
That's sort of my timeline that at least I've had in my head. Could be way off, but that's sort of what I'm thinking. That so it seems like that week of June 20th to 24th and 25th might just be absolute chaos. You got the name, you got the draft, you know, the draft taking place on both the Friday and the Saturday, of course. And then to top it off, 1 week later, Canada Day. It's not just a holiday celebrating the birth of this country. It's a holiday celebrating the start of NHL free agency, and we know what kind of frenzy that is.
You know, we have Craig Heisinger and Kevin Cheveldayoff off coming up, because those guys, I imagine, are probably getting less sleep than I am right now. Because
probably, yes.
I would hope that they're getting less sleep than you are.
I'm not getting a lot of sleep. My anticipation. I mean, I don't know whether I'm going to be putting a Jets jersey on or if I'm going to have to rush down and get... you know, the first ever Manitoba Falcons or Manitoba Polar Bears jersey, but these guys are obviously hardworking already. I thought that, you know, the media coverage was absolutely excellent in all outlets in Winnipeg, because these guys are so committed to, it's almost like they're at the press conference. They were, you know, Mark Chipman was at the podium and he introduced Craig Heisinger, who everyone in Winnipeg knows, and Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Mm-hmm.
The news was the cat was out of the bag as far as we knew he was going to be named, you know, GM days before Tim Campbell broke the story for the press. But it almost seemed like their sleeves were already rolled up and they were ready to... they were already, you know, thinking of who they're going to draft, and they were ready to go at that press conference.
I mean, they have to
be ready.
They have to say, you know, hello family, we'll see you in a couple months, but we have to get to work right now.
Yep.
And I mean, so they certainly know that, but they don't need us to remind them of that. They know that, and they've obviously hit the ground running.
They have to hire staff. They have to watch tape. They have to prepare for the draft. Not just the draft coming up within the next 2 weeks. Not only preparing for that and that angle, you need to watch tape of the team last year. You were not watching them on a day-to-day basis. You don't know all the strengths and weaknesses of all the players. So I'm sure they're doing their due diligence.
Yeah.
And they're taking care of now. It might not be the GMs. It might be other people. It might be reporting back. It's a team. We don't know who the team is going to be, and we're going to ask those questions. But, you know, by all accounts, you're putting the organization into... two sets of very capable hands.
Yes, and that's something that people can certainly take confidence in, is that the you know, we know the track record of Craig Heisinger. We've seen it with the Manitoba Moose year in and year out, really putting together a perennial contender, you know, and often doing so while being victimized by call-ups and injuries and everything else that's associated with being a farm team of an NHL club. So you have to have a ton of depth to be able to plug guys in that you wouldn't necessarily plan on playing on a regular basis.
Now, I mean, the hirings have been received very well here.
Yes.
I think rightfully so. James Murdo wrote about it in the Globe this week that some NHL types are somewhat skeptical about the lack of experience in the front office. I mean, I guess time will tell in that regard. You know, you don't have... you know, people. There's always a first time for everything, right? I mean, Phil Jackson didn't have experience as a head coach before he in the NHL level before he, sorry the NBA level before he took over the Bulls. So I mean, there's a first time for everything, and we're gonna see. But I think overall, it's been received quite well. Both men are clearly highly regarded within the National Hockey League and within the hockey world in general, and that's only a positive. If this was not as well received within the National Hockey League, I'd be more concerned. But by all accounts, now I know far more of the track record of Zinger than of Cheveldayoff. But they get along well, by all accounts, and there's a mutual respect, which is more important.
You can't be as successful as Kevin Cheveldayoff was as the general manager of the Chicago Wolves without having a pretty good eye for talent.
The best part I thought about Zinger's quotes this week was him saying that they're not yes men, and that they have to challenge each other. And you know, he was talking about how, and I think the article, I forget who wrote the article, but how him and Chipman get on their get on each other's nerves sometimes, and they're not yes men. And that to me was the most important thing I read all week, because groups of yes men, I can talk about it in when Gretzky was there and a bunch of people around him were probably yes men, and I don't have a first hand accounting of that, things probably get out of hand. But when you have people who are held accountable to each other, who don't necessarily agree but respectfully disagree, that's only a positive, in my opinion, moving forward.
But guys, there's one thing that you absolutely cannot deny about True North Sports and Entertainment. There's nothing, in my opinion, I can only say the utmost positive things about True North, but there's one thing that needs to be taken into consideration as far as these hires go, that being, you know, Heisinger and Cheveldayoff. True North as an organization has synergy. They're always on the same page. Everyone is working together. And Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger have known each other since they were essentially teenagers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back to the Brandon Wheat Kings days.
Yeah.
They were rivals on the ice as far as Chicago Wolves versus the Manitoba Moose. And let's be honest, the Chicago Wolves dominated the Manitoba.
You're listening to the elite.
The Manitoba, whoa. Tim, just seeing if I'm awake, right?
Tim, you're trying to go to commercial already?
Yeah. Okay. But, you know, the Manitoba Moose and Chicago Wolves are rivals, but Zinger and Cheveldayoff have always had a good relationship as far as colleagues go. And Mark Chipman and Craig Heisinger have said that they have one guy in mind for the GM position. And that from all of the executives, Drew, coaches, players that we've interviewed on the show in the last 2.5 years, I mean, look at 3 weeks ago when we had Bob Murdoch on. He said he didn't get along with Mike Smith. GMs and coaches and GMs and assistant GMs, they always don't get along. And there's one thing for sure. True North has always made sure that the organization's always going in the right direction. Everyone's got the same goal. And I believe when Kevin Cheveldayoff says that he wants to build a winner and Craig Heisinger says they want to build a winner.
Everybody wants to build a winner.
Yeah. And
the question do you think that this is the right brain trust to build that
absolutely
winner?
Absolutely, I do.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, you know, I'm happy that they hired a up-and-comer who might be hungry rather than sort of a quote-unquote proven general manager who might not have the desire burning in him instead.
I just like the idea of hiring new blood and giving somebody else a chance to try and make their name for themselves. And I guess along those points, Drew, I agree with you there. So I absolutely think that you're on the right track.
But Richie, Kevin Cheveldayoff was a player who became, I believe he started with either Utah or Denver before he moved to
the
Chicago Wolves organization.
Mm-hmm.
Did nothing but win. They won two Turner Cups and two Calder Cups. Mm-hmm. Then he moves to the Hawks and becomes the right-hand man to Stan Bowman, right? And they win the Stanley Cup.
Now, let me say
who
this.
Better than Kevin
Cheveldayoff
to be given a GM position?
Let me say this. He was the GM of many of those Wolves teams, and they won full credit where credit's due. He came in as the GM, assistant GM in Chicago the year that they won the Cup. But I don't think Stan Bowman made one trade that year that had any real significance in terms of them winning the Cup. The only trade they really made was the Cam Barker trade, which was more for the future, as you saw Nick Leddy play really well this year in the first round, and they got a draft pick. So I'm not so sure how much Cheveldayoff had how much of an effect he had on the Stanley Cup win, but he certainly had an effect on the Calder Cup wins. He was the architect of those teams.
But the
Chicago Blackhawks, even Stan Bowman, I would go so far as saying Stan Bowman didn't have as much of an effect on that Stanley Cup as Dale Talon.
Sure, because it was
and Rick Dudley.
It was Talon and Dudley's teams, and Bowman sort of reaped the benefits of it. We've documented that over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But as it relates to Cheveldayoff, I'm a firm believer that when you're a winner in one level, you can very well, you know what it takes to be a winner in the next level. You know what it takes in terms of the hard work.
Oh yeah, I don't disagree. I'm just saying in terms of giving credit.
Well, you know,
now,
exactly.
I'm
more impressed with his track record of winning as the general manager
exactly.
of the Chicago
Wolves
than I am of his track record of winning as assistant general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Exactly.
Right.
But it's important that he did spend 2 years within the National Hockey League front office, especially
learning
this
the
cap
culture,
environment.
Learning everything.
That's what, yeah, the
That's
culture, right. but also the cap environment.
He was also the capologist. He was responsible for the cap in Chicago. So he knows the value of the salary cap,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to that should give people a lot of good feelings and confidence in knowing that Winnipeg's not going to be, you know, like some of these other franchises who blow their cap room on bad deals.
Chris Drake. Another reassuring part is the fact that there's probably no better people person and manager of personalities than Craig Heisinger.
So
it's a nice mix.
Exactly. It's the best of both worlds from the looks of it. And, of course, we'll hear from both of them. Kevin Cheveldayoff at 10:30 and Craig Heisinger at 11:30. Let's go to our first commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about last night's Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals. You're listening to the Illegal Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Minutes past 9 a.m. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come this hour, Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province is going to join us next segment to talk about Game 5. But before then, why don't we talk a little bit about Game 5? Occurred last night. Another Vancouver 1-0 win. You know, the most big stat, and we'll ask Ben about it, is Vancouver has scored 6 goals in 5 games, and yet they somehow lead the series 3-2.
It's truly an amazing statistic.
Yeah, I mean, there was a World Series, I don't remember what year, between Pittsburgh and New York that went 7 games.
When you were like...
Yeah, I was waiting for the joke.
If it was 1976, Drew, you were, I think, 14 at the time.
It was before 1976, but before I even started with this analogy, I knew the joke was coming.
Well, what are you talking about, World Series 1965?
The
Miracle Mets?
No, the Pirates won the World Series that year.
Mazeroski?
Yes, Mazeroski.
Against the Giants. Was it the New York Giants they played that year?
No, I thought it was the Yankees, wasn't it?
Wasn't it the New York Knickerbockers?
Yeah,
it was the Yankees. Anyways, they won the series in 7 games, 4 games to 3. And they ended, I think throughout the series, they were destroyed. Definitely gave up more runs than they scored. Okay. But it just goes to show you, it only matters how many games you win. If you win 4 games 1-0 and lose the other 3 15-0, it doesn't matter one bit.
Sorry, Richie. I was just going to say, I think that the whole score thing is, you know, kind of being talked about way too much. You're right. It matters who's winning. The first two games were both... The first game was there was 1 goal scored. The second game, there was 3 goals scored. And yesterday's game, there's 1 goal scored. So... I, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, the Canucks haven't
second game,
a lot
second game, there's 5 goals scored, I think, Yezzy. 3-2, I think it was, wasn't it?
Wasn't it 2-1?
Drew, check that.
I think it was 3-2.
I think it was 3-2.
Okay, so there...
Game 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 3-2.
Okay, so it was 3-2, but still relatively low scoring, by the way.
Well, that's probably about an average finals game.
Okay, but the most important thing is 2 goals were 1-0 games, Game 1 and Game 5, okay? So Boston scored 0 goals, so yeah, maybe Vancouver scored 2 goals, but Boston scored 0, so why is that relevant? What's relevant is they didn't score, they only scored 1 goal in Boston. As far as I'm concerned, the biggest surprise for me, or the biggest shocking aspect of this series for me, is that Vancouver's up 3-2, and the Sedins haven't played well. Yesterday was, in my opinion, their best game, but they haven't... What do they have between them? 2 points combined in 5 games?
I think 2 shots.
2 shots? That's the biggest surprise.
You're right. They've been absolutely awful, and I don't know why. They seem to be getting, not a free pass, but they don't seem to be getting the criticism that Roberto Luongo got after games 3 and 4, and I didn't really think he deserved the criticism he was getting. I didn't think many of those goals he let in... Well, you know, Game 3 was an aberration once it became just a blowout.
Game 4 was the worst performance out of the two, I think.
Did you think that many of those goals he gave up were softies?
I mean, he didn't play great, Drew, but is he the reason that they're losing? I mean, the guy's been tremendous in 3 of the 5 games. His team didn't show up for games 3 and 4. People love blaming the goaltender when they have no other justification for the loss. I know he didn't play great, but where were the Sedins in those games? I mean, I know they had a good first period, I think, in Game... 4, but I just don't see the overall team. I didn't think the overall team effort was that good. Christian Ehrhoff has been awful. The defense has been pretty bad. Defense was pretty bad in both of those games. The Vancouver defense actually doesn't look that great right now. But overall, I mean, Luongo's going to get blamed. Why is he going to get blamed? Because he's a goaltender, and the Vancouver and the many bandwagon fans that they have that go along with
almighty.
That.
It's unbelievable.
I would say they're probably not the most knowledgeable. Bandwagon fans generally are not the most knowledgeable fans, and they seem to blame the easiest target, which is the goaltender, guys. A lot of things happen on these plays that people don't realize, or people who the fans who aren't real fans don't pick up on. Overall, I want to get back to that point about the goal differential.
Okay.
3-1 goal games.
Yeah.
You know, the breakdown by the stupid pinch by Johnny Boychuk in game 1 that led to the first goal.
Right.
And the Taurus winner. Okay, that's game 1. Game 2, the Burrows, you know, wrap around in overtime.
Yeah.
And then yesterday.
Which was a lazy play by Chara.
He's tired.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, whatever. Hit the guy. Trip him. Do something. Yeah. Don't let him skate past
you. Shouldn't get burned like that. Yep. And then, of course, game 5. To me, you guys probably know where I was going to stand on this. 3-1 goal games are kind of coin flip games. I mean, yesterday the Bruins outshot the Canucks. I know the Canucks maybe controlled the play for a majority.
If the Bruins had anything borderline resembling an NHL power play, they win that game.
I agree with that.
If they have anything resembling an NHL power play in the playoffs, they're cup winners. They still be cup winners. But Drew, they absolutely dominated Vancouver for 2 games for the most part. I mean, there were spurts of the first periods and such where they weren't.
Yeah.
And then the other three games in Vancouver were coin flip games. To me, Boston has been the better team in the final.
Well, they have. There hasn't been a game where Boston hasn't shown up. There are two games that Vancouver just mailed it in. I mean, and I think it's going back for seven. I think it's got to go seven, and I think it'll be another one goal
game. Based on the series, you'd have to probably think that. I predicted Vancouver in six prior to the series. So I'm not going to change that. But based on the series, you'd have to think
have
that.
You
now,
seen
let me say this.
Okay.
You know, you talk about, oh, win it for Horton, win it for Horton. And they're trying to win it for Horton. But they missed
Horton. Themselves.
And that's not that. They missed Horton now.
Yeah.
He's a top line right winger on that team, a great shot, a power forward, a good skater, a very, very good player. They don't have Peverly played really well, scored the 5-hole goal in game four, but overall, that hurts their depth. He doesn't trust Sagan. Everybody takes a bigger role, and you already remember.
Yeah, so let's put Gregory Campbell on the power play because he's really an efficient power play
player. I cannot
believe
that.
Yeah.
But why? I mean, you have to understand one other thing that people haven't pointed out. Now, obviously, the ramifications need to be taken into account when you think about this because they were able to add more players. But imagine if Mark Savard's on this team.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You're without Mark Savard, and you're without Ethan Horton right now.
Now, Samuelson's not there for Vancouver, and they miss him.
Yeah.
They do.
Okay. But you can't compare him to either of those two guys.
No, you can't.
I mean, you know, that's a guy they're missing. But that's apples and oranges.
Hamhuis, though.
Yeah, Hamhuis' loss has been huge.
Okay, Hamhuis, that's what I was just going to mention. You guys stole the name out of my mouth, okay? So this whole notion that, you know, Boston, right now, it's undeniable right now what's happened, in my opinion, in the series, which is to what Richie said. The games in Vancouver have been close games, not dominated by either team, and they've been all one-goal games, which is actually surprising. But Vancouver's found a way to win. In Boston, Boston is dominated, and Vancouver's played like a different team. Luongo hasn't played well. So now you have a game. There's two games left. It became a best of three. Now Vancouver's got the momentum. But if there's this notion of Boston playing for Horton, so is Vancouver not playing for Hamhuis? I mean, that's what I'm talking about. As far as I'm concerned, this is not.
I think the difference
that's not really the storyline here. The storyline is Vancouver playing well in Boston's building, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Vancouver isn't playing well. Vancouver, to me, I mean...
Well, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver, to me, does not seem like they're mentally tough enough to go into a place like Boston and win Game 6. I don't think that they have the mental fortitude to do it.
Well, Drew, if you're using Game 3 and 4 as a barometer, you're exactly right. Because they, as far as I'm concerned, they're almost a different. They've almost been a different team this entire playoffs. Because it's not a dynasty, and I'm absolutely shocked that Henrik Sedin is second in the NHL in scoring. Because as far as I'm concerned, the Sedins, going back to the first round, second round, third round, and in this round, still haven't played that well.
No, they haven't
they
played
really
that well.
Haven't.
That's why I don't understand why Luongo's getting criticized. No. But the face of the team, the Sedin, the captain of the
team.
They
were great against the Sharks.
Yeah. Okay. But the Sharks were just happy to be there. They didn't have anything left in the tank.
I don't know about that, Drew. I just think that they played well. They played well against defensemen who just weren't as good. Remember, think about it in terms of that, Drew. Keith Seabrook, although they were split up for a majority of that series.
You're right.
Weber, Suter, Sharks, nobody shut down, and then Chara, Seidenberg. And Chara has been absolutely dominating in terms of his physically imposing against the Sedins. And the Sedins, for all of their talent, obviously, we know that they're soft.
Yeah,
they're soft. Doesn't mean they're not great players. Doesn't mean they can't win a championship. But
this
soft.
Is the playoffs. This is the playoffs where it's completely different. And I would feel confident in saying in three, maybe even all series, they've been physically dominated and shut down in some aspect of the game.
Let me quickly, Drew, before you break. This is the most... Vancouver is the most talented team on paper, and they're likely going to win. I'm not so sure. I don't see this team as ever being a team that probably overachieves with who's on this team. But this is what they should be like. They should win this series.
Yeah, and they're the better of the two teams on paper.
People get onto this quote unquote on this bandwagon. This is not an underdog story. This is the best team statistically all year. There's no reason why you shouldn't expect them to win, especially against the Boston team without arguably their top center and arguably their top scoring winger.
I completely agree with you. Before we go to break, I just want to read what Dan from the North End typed into the Illegal Curve chat room taking place at www.illegalcurve.com. It relates to the bandwagon nature of Canucks fans. If Winnipeg has a team in the finals, is there any scenario in which Winnipeg fans turn on our starting goaltender?
No.
I don't think there is, and that says a lot about Vancouver fans. Let's go to break. When we come back, Ben Kuzma. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're trying to get Ben Kuzma on the line. He's, I think, probably clearing airport security at the moment. So Remus, just keep trying him. I'm sure that he'll get available. He's
Remus is awake, though, right?
Remus is awake, yeah. Okay.
Remus is trying to clear airport security.
Is he? I don't think that's going to work. Anyways, Ben Kuzma's on his way to Boston on an early morning flight. So we appreciate him hopefully joining us as soon as he's available. So Remus, you'll keep working on that undoubtedly. In the meantime, lots of chatter going on in the chat room, www.illegalcurve.com. People asking, really continuing on that part of, would you ever see a Winnipeg team turn on their starting goaltender in the playoffs? And throughout our career, or our team's history as the Jets, with the exception of Habib Boulin, we weren't known for stellar goaltending. Yet I don't ever remember a circumstance where the fans really booed any goaltender off the, or any team off the ice, like they were doing, in the Rogers Arena.
Well, I mean, Drew, I just think that the calls for Corey Schneider are a little bit over the top, only because
it's a little bit late too, Richie.
Luongo's numbers over the course of the season and even over the course of the playoffs are very good, and he has won before. And people always question, "Oh, have you won before? Can you do it again?" He has won. The Olympics, obviously, he won when they were against Chicago in Game 7 this year. Corey Schneider's a good goalie, but you're going to tell me that you're set that Alain Vigneault and a veteran head coach would throw a young netminder into Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final? I mean, that's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous suggestion. It doesn't make any sense.
I think it's one thing when you do it, like he played Schneider in Game 6 against Chicago. And I think the reason, it's one thing to do it there where you have a game as a buffer.
A
buffer. In that, you know, if they lose that game, you still have another chance at it. So it's not the end
of the
world.
It's also the first round.
Yeah, it's also the first round. But what's it going to take for, you know, this attitude that Roberto Luongo is not a winner to go away? Is it ever going to go away? He's won a gold medal. He's leading his team, through 5 games of the Stanley Cup Finals. He's played very well all year. You know, what's it going to take for them to truly, believe in him unequivocally?
Drew, you want to know why Richie's right when he says that it was ridiculous for people to question Luongo and ask for, Schneider to be in Game 5? Because Luongo played unbelievably last night after getting shelled 8-1.
And he
responded by shutting out the Boston Bruins in Game 5 at home. What else can you do? I mean, it's almost like Roberto Luongo, people are expecting him to be a superhero or something. I mean, he has bad games. He had a couple of bad games in Boston.
I don't even think he was that bad in Boston compared to the rest of the team. I thought the team in front of him was terrible.
Right, so he stepped up and he played unbelievable last night.
I wasn't surprised that he did. I just don't understand why he is the only one who gets the brunt of the criticism.
Well, Drew, this is the thing about Luongo, is that as you saw last night, he made some amazing saves, whether it be on Bergeron, and he got lucky with the post on the Kelly shot. But Luongo right now doesn't look like Patrick Waugh or Eddie Belfour, because when those guys play,
when he wins, he does.
Sometimes, not even Eddie, because he doesn't look smooth. Patrick Waugh made every save look pretty easy. And I even harken back to the Joe Pavelski shot on Roberto Luongo in overtime of the Olympics, when Luongo made the glove save after the Niedermeyer turnover. He made the glove save, but the puck didn't stay in his glove. It looped out and came out in front of the net. And then they ended up driving the other way and scoring on a Crosby goal. But it wasn't a smooth save. Patrick Waugh, for the most part, made everything look easy. Luongo doesn't necessarily make it look easy, but he makes the saves. And in this day and age, whether it be Dominic Hasek, Dwayne Roloson, Tim Thomas, and now Luongo, if you make the saves, who cares how you make them? You made them. It doesn't matter.
I couldn't agree with you more, Richie. Ben Kuzma's on the line. Let's go to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Or not. Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province, how is airport security on this Saturday morning?
Security's not bad. The longest lineup is usually at Starbucks because, this is Vancouver and we can't function at our morning shot. So we're good. We're caffeined up. We're at the gate, and I figured let's talk some hockey.
There you go, Ben. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. Well, given that there's 3 Starbucks on our tables in front of us, we'll just let that comment slide a little bit. But we appreciate you joining us bright and early.
It depends how many shots you got in there. That's the key. It's not the drink. It's how many shots are in it.
It's straight coffee for me. I don't know about the other two guys.
No. Okay. Vancouver, it's like triple, quadruple, or
I'm not
just
that.
Just keep them coming.
I'm not that fancy. What can I say? Ben, you know, we were talking about this in the last segment, but the Canucks have scored 6 goals in 5 games, yet somehow they lead 3-2 in the series. Have you ever seen a series like this before?
Well, I don't think I've seen the back-to-back pummelings, the 8-1 and the 4-0 games in Boston. I mean, usually you might get a one-off where the team goes off the rails and you chalk it up to the fact that, you know what, we just don't have it tonight. And the other team, you know, especially like game 3 in Boston, where you can just tell when the Bruins finally got a break in the second period and got a couple of fortunate goals that they just caught fire and the Canucks seemed to lose it. So, but back-to-back, that's rare. I mean, earlier in the playoffs, we saw in Chicago where the Canucks lost 7-2 and then lost 5-0 at home. But this is the final. You usually don't expect that kind of a swing in results. But I think from a Canuck perspective, they really lost their game in Boston. I'm not just saying the X's and O's part, but, you know, their composure, playing out of character, all the stuff after the whistles. That's Boston Bruins hockey. That's not the Canucks. The Canucks, it's puck movement, it's maybe draw a penalty or two. They were better at it last night, and I heard you mention earlier, they certainly got the goaltending and were more present. I mean, they doubled them in hits last night and played a much more physical game. And the one thing I really noticed, their ability to get the puck out of their own zone and found a way to win, because it's not easy to beat the Bruins. They keep everything to the outside. You don't get much out front. Thomas is a tough guy to beat, and it took a bit of a snicker shot to beat him last night.
Yeah, Ben, we talk about the home and road, the difference in play really from the Canucks. Do you think that's it seems like they're also having a easier time, or they're stopping Boston from coming through the neutral zone more successfully at home rather than on the road. Do you see it as a mental thing, or is it a matchup thing? Why have they been so awful in Boston so far?
Well, you know, it shouldn't be a matchup thing. I mean, you know, teams change on the fly now, and they like to have Kessler's line out there against Krejci, and Kessler's, you know, playing with a bad groin, but certainly looked a lot better last night. That was one thing for the Canucks to build on last night. I thought the second line was more effective. Didn't score, obviously, but created a lot more off the rush. But getting back to your earlier part, I think the Canucks' gap control is a lot better at home. I don't know what it is. The back pressure from the forwards coming back. It's when you have those wide gaps against any team that, you know, when you give up the blue line and start backing up, that causes problems. And the Bruins have a problem, actually, of doing that on the road. And they did it several times last night. You just can't give up the blue line. You've got to keep those gaps so tight. But, you know, it's easy for us to sit here and talk about it. You know, the heat of the battle and the emotion and the energy that was running through that building last night. You know, everybody's trying to do something a little bit extra, and usually that's when mistakes happen, and you get a goal. And even the goal last night was, as much as everybody thought it was a fluke, you know, the guys were talking after about, you know, that was a scouting report on Thomas, is that, you know, he likes to wide, and they've tried that a few times in Boston, where BXO or whoever will purposely shoot the puck wide, because, you know, Thomas is so active going post to post that he's probably going to go outside the paint or whatever. And Lapierre, you know, picked up off the end boards, and it was a sharp angle shot that hit Thomas. He got a piece of it. By the time he reached back, it was already in the net. And he's just so hard to beat, and the Bruins give up so few chances in the slot that it almost took something a little bit extra to beat him last night.
Ben, you wrote about Maxim Lapierre in today's Vancouver Province. How pleasant of a surprise has he been filling in a role that, you know, basically the healthy now Manny Malhotra was expected to play, you know, obviously before he went injured, before he got injured going into the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. When they got Lapierre and Higgins at the deadline, a lot of us were kind of scratching our heads going, okay, well, how many teams has Higgins played for? 5 in the last 4 years. Yeah. Lapierre was in Montreal, went to Anaheim, didn't do much there because they basically are a two-line hockey club. But I'll give the Canucks credit. Their scouting staff, Lucien Deblois in Montreal, and Lauren Henning, the assistant GM who actually resides in Anaheim, saw Lapierre play a lot. And the big thing here in Vancouver was that they knew their bottom six had to be much better in the playoffs this year, especially their third line. Couldn't compete against Chicago last year. That's kind of where they lost the series. So the hope was that getting Lapierre and Higgins would immediately help out the fourth line. But, of course, with injury and indifferent play, as you mentioned, the next thing you know, Lapierre is playing third line center, and with Samuelson's injury, Higgins is up on the second line. And, you know, it takes so many guys to win this thing, and I don't know if they'd be here without those two guys. They have been great. I think what some of the players were telling me last night, and Lapierre told me this before, you know, when he walked into that room, he saw, you know, the level of where the performance bar was at, and the level of accountability in that room that you just can't walk in and be marching to your own beat. You better get your act together in a hurry. And more often than not, Lapierre has. I mean, everybody likes to single out, you know, when he does his yappy lappy thing, because that's part of his DNA as a hockey player. But his ability to skate and hit, I mean, I think was underrated. He moves. I mean, there are times in the third period there, he looked like he was the fastest guy on the ice. And, you know, he's not afraid to throw his weight around. And when he can play in control, he's a very effective player. And he's been more than 50% in the circle. So a real pleasant surprise and some pretty good scouting there at the pro level by the Canucks.
We're joined on the line by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province. Ben, last time you were on the air with us, we asked you about this, and it still applies. You know, why is Roberto Luongo such a target for criticism and the wrath of the Vancouver fans? And I mean, if he wins the cup, is that going to put an end to the wrath, or is it just going to continue no matter what happens?
Well, I think there'll be a certain segment of the populace will say, like they did in the Olympics, that they had a hell of a team in front of them. I think where that comes from is there's some inconsistency. You know, the thing is, you look at the games in Boston, and then you look what he did last night, and it's the inconsistency that kind of drives people crazy here because, of course, you know, it's all predicated on goaltending at this time of the year. And last night you saw the more controlled Luongo square, not making the first move, not reacting to the first shot and being there for the second one. And it's been an ongoing process because I don't want to say his game was stripped down this year, but Rolly Melanson, the full-time goalie coach, which they've never really had here since Luongo's been here, has got him to play a little bit deeper in his crease. Understand that, you know, you might give up more than that, but you're not going to give up those backdoor plays that kind of made him, you know, a nervous Nelly in past years. So I think a product of all that was last night. He's going to have to obviously carry it on into Boston because I expect a big pushback from the Bruins on Monday. So, but that's the big angst in Vancouver. It's the inconsistency. But, you know, to be honest, if you watch the long all year down the stretch and into the playoffs, outside of a couple of bad games in Chicago and, again, a couple ones in Boston, he's been probably as good as he's been here since they got him.
Did you think he was taking a shot at Tim Thomas with his post-game comments?
I thought he was, and then when I really thought about it, I don't think so. I think what he was referring to is that, you know, they do play two different styles, and because he plays deeper towards his goal line now, that kind of shot's not going to beat Luongo, where Thomas is maybe on top of the paint or outside the paint, and he's maybe giving up that short side. That's where Lapierre shot the puck and hit him. And then as he twisted and turned and reached for the puck, it was already over the goal line. So I don't think it could be construed as a shot. I don't think it was. I think what he was saying is that, listen, I'm not going to let a goal in like that because I've refined my goaltending style.
Which is interesting.
Or maybe it was a bit of a shot.
he's also
maybe underneath the surface. You could be into it. All right. Sure.
Yeah, seemed like it might have been. Ben, one guy that I've noticed throughout the entire playoffs has been, to me, and you would know more because you're in the room and you talk to the players, maybe, I know Henrik Sedin wears a C, but to me the most calming influence in that locker room seems to be Kevin Bieksa. After a big win or after a big loss, he never seems too high or too low. Can you speak about that?
Well, I think a lot of that comes from experience. I think Kevin's been up here for, what, seven years now, and a lot of it comes from, you know, the guy's had some of the most freakish injuries in his career with a calf laceration and a ankle tendon lacerations from skates where he's basically spent the better part of the seasons on the sidelines. So he's gone through all that stuff. And I think what really helped Kevin this year was the acquisition of Dan Hamhuis. It allowed Kevin to jump up into the play more and then get back some of that offensive game that he showed when he first came into the NHL and got his contract extension. And I think that peace of mind having Hamhuis back there has just made him more effective in all zones. But you know, he's sort of regathered his game now with Hamhuis out. And you're right. I think that what you see in BX is kind of what you see in the room now. This is year 12 for me covering this team, and I don't think I've seen a team that's as tight as this one or as good in the room. And a lot of that comes from the pedigree that has to come from within the room. You can't acquire all these guys at the, you know, in free agency or the trade deadline or to suddenly make your room good, as they say. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of grow together or make a key acquisition like Emmanuel Holtz, who you might know from another movie. So eventually that playoff pedigree has to come from within your room, and the X is certainly one of the emerging core, the next level of guys who are going to have to carry this team forward. And I wouldn't be surprised if the X signs a long-term deal here. I mean, I know they have some cap considerations on the back end, but of course the cap is going up, and they have a few cards to play. But I would say at this point that they're going to take a hard, long look at the X because they can probably get them cheaper if they give up some term.
Sometimes the best trades are the ones you don't make. And I think in the case of Kevin Bieksa, that's certainly the case.
Hey, Ben.
Well, yeah, I mean, we all thought when Sal ruptured his Achilles in July there, that all he had to do was add up the numbers and something had to give on the back end just to get under the cap. And it seemed that, you know, with the acquisitions of Hamus and Ballard, that Bieksa would be expendable because there's some market value there and you're probably going to get something back in a trade, and not just a salary dump, and maybe not take on too much salary back. But management and Bieksa have reiterated this fact over the months that, you know, that was really never the plan. They wanted to keep Bieksa, and they were fortunate in the sense that they kept getting the long-term injury relief with guys getting hurt at the right time. But they were able to keep their noses just under the cap ceiling. So it's all worked out for them. I mean, the capologist earned his money this year, so it all worked out for them, but you know, it's funny. Once this thing is done, it's not going to take us long to figure out how they can keep it together or what they're going to have to do to be as competitive next year.
Ben, you're on your way to Boston, and we're obviously looking forward to Game 6, but we're well into the series. As far as this series goes, who has impressed you the most on Boston?
I'm going to say, I did a piece on him the other day just because I really didn't know much about him outside of the World Junior, but Brad Marchand has really, really impressed me. The guy's
me too.
Almost 5'9", about 190. He looks like he should be in the ring rather than playing hockey. He's short, squat, got the big nose, looks like he's perfectly suited for Boston, that he should be in the movie The Boxer or whatever. But I just like his, he skates extremely well. I love his tenacity. I love his strength on the puck. And here's a guy that is, 23 now, that people weren't sure that if he could take what he did at the junior level to the NHL level. I think he's perfectly suited. This is the perfect franchise for him to be playing with. It's you know, they play through you in Boston. They don't play around you. And Marchand impressed me with his ability to forecheck, hit, and has a pretty decent set of hands. So, you know, we're finding out a lot about these guys as we see him on a regular basis. But he's really caught my eye.
Ben, why don't you go on this last question? We know that somebody will be coming back to Vancouver on Tuesday of this week. Do you expect that you'll be doing so to go cover a Game 7, or do you expect that you're going to go cover a Stanley Cup parade?
Why do I think it's going 7? Just something about it. I mean, the Bruins, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. That game was up for grabs last night. So I'd like to be proved wrong, but I just think that this thing might go the distance, and we might be talking later in the week.
I think if it goes 7, the fever pitch will reach. I mean, Vancouver looked crazy last night. Never mind what it'll look like after a Game 7.
Well, yeah, it took me forever to get to my car last night. It was, there 100,000 people in the downtown core, and extremely well behaved, and way more than the Olympic experience I had here. The crowd, it was way more than the Olympic crowds. It was something I haven't quite seen yet, and we'll see if it plays out in Game 7. So we'll see.
Exactly. We'll be watching. Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver province, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Have a good flight.
Okay, guys. You take care.
Take care, Ben. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this, and then in the next hour, Craig, Kevin Cheveldayoff, your calls, your tweets, your emails, lots more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. A little tragically hip, bringing us back from the commercial break. We just heard from Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver province. In case you missed any of the interview or any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
And Drew, we should mention to our fans that you're going to be on the next season of Dancing with the Stars.
Twitter. @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and you can always email us info@IllegalCurve.com, and there's a hopping draft chatting, www.illegalcurve.com. Yeah, people are up early this morning in Winnipeg and throughout the world. I'm very impressed.
They want to hear the interviews.
They want to hear the interviews. They want to hear the analysis. They want to talk hockey. It's at a fever pitch. It's only going to get stronger, especially as the anticipation continues to grow about what the team name is going to be.
I want to talk a little bit about the Andrew Ladd extension, possible extension, after the break.
You mean the re-signing of Andrew
Ladd? Yeah, I think it's getting a little out of hand, some of the contract figures I'm seeing. People need to calm down a bit.
Rein it in?
Rein it in.
You're doing the hand gestures.
Rein it in.
Rein it in.
Rein it in.
Okay, so after the commercial break, we'll talk about that. We will, we'll talk about the Andrew Ladd. I mean, you did the analysis of the roster, so we can go through that about sort of where you thought Andrew Ladd should land in comparison to some of the other players of a similar value and where they should be, you know, aiming to sign him for, at what level and what dollar amount.
Yeah, I'm hearing some figures that I think are a little bit high.
Sure.
So let's not get out of hand here.
No, I mean, the truth is, you're not going to lose them. You're not going to lose them unless somebody comes in with a $8 million a year offer. And if somebody does that, good luck to them.
Even if somebody comes in with a $5 million a year offer, you probably let them go.
Yeah.
So that's not going to happen. He's not going to get a $5 million a year offer. They're going to sign him. He's not going to get an offer sheet. But there's many players. We're going to ask Kevin Cheveldayoff about this. There's many players on this. Not many, but there are a few restricted free agents who may garner interest on the market. Are any of them worthy of an offer sheet? In my opinion, the only one worthy of an offer sheet would be Zach Bogosian. The rest of them would not be.
Right.
So I don't think Andrew Ladd is a threat for an offer sheet. Now, I mean,
beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
The threat always exists,
yeah.
But I just don't think that's the case.
Richie, contract aside, though, you know, didn't you think it was just a great decision by Andrew Ladd and True North to come here? You know, talk to the media. You know, we got the...
Apparently he did it on his own dime.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not I believe that, I'm not 100% sure, but I thought it was PR genius.
PR genius because... And just a general good move. I mean, we got the email, and all of us obviously have day jobs, so we couldn't go down to the MTS Center, but everyone was invited to interview him, and it was just great because everything he's saying is he's jacked to play here. Nobody's expecting him not to sign a contract very soon and stay here.
Would be, you'd be hard-pressed to lose his rights unless somebody loses their mind and offers him a ridiculous contract. And if they do, good for him.
Take the compensation.
That's right. You take the five first-round draft picks or whatever. It's not going to happen, though.
Let's not get carried away here.
It's the captain of the team here, and he was quoted as saying by many people that, you know, he wants to... No, he wants to, talk to Mark Chipman, talk to the new GM.
He spoke to them, and
he can relay the message to all of his players. I mean, this guy was named captain of the team in November. This is the leader of the team. That's huge when you're factoring in signing him. Yeah, sure, Richie, there's going to be some comparables that they're going to have to, this is a big contract because he's at the age where he's probably, aren't you imagining he's going to want a 3 to 5 year deal?
Yeah. Yeah, so. I agree with that. Now, I think this guy's also, you have to understand that Ladd was in contract negotiations with the Atlanta Brass prior to the team moving here. Now, the Atlanta Brass, let's just say, were pretty generous in their contracts.
To Dustin Byfuglien, sure, and some of the other guys.
Yeah.
Byfuglien is worth every penny of it.
Yeah.
But every single penny.
They were generous for that, generous with Mark Stewart, and they were generous with their executive contracts, like Waddell's handout to Rick Dudley right before he knew the team was moving.
Exactly. A classy move by Waddell there.
Right, took care of his friend, so, I mean, that's fine. I mean,
it's not his
money.
Apparently, Atlanta Spirit had to pay out that contract anyway, so who knows what's going on there.
But the point is that there may be figures in Atlanta which could hurt the negotiating process in Winnipeg, in that when you get a number in mind, maybe it's high. I'm just speculating now. Maybe it was higher there than what Winnipeg is prepared to offer. That might bring them to a disconnect. Do I think the deal gets done, though? Yes, I do, and we'll talk about more after the break.
Let's go to break. We have some callers calling in, so stay on hold. We'll get to you right after the commercial messages. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. See, I rhymed. See how that worked? I rhymed.
Hey now, brown cow.
There you go. In case you missed any of the opening hour, we were joined by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province. Still to come this hour, Kevin Cheveldayoff, the new general manager of the Winnipeg Whatevers.
The man that everybody wants to talk to, and we have him on the show.
Yes, that's very true. And then at 11:30 this morning, Craig Heisinger, senior or assistant general manager and senior vice president and director of hockey operations of the Winnipeg Whatevers.
Are we calling them the Winnipeg Whatevers,
or the
yet-to-be-named NHL team?
I think the Winnipeg Whatevers is a lot easier to say than the yet-to-be-named NHL team.
Hockey organization formerly known as Winnipeg Jets.
Really? That's what you're going with? You're going to fit that on your business card?
What about if they just had... Oh, actually, they couldn't do this. It was a giveaway. I was going to say, that, like, remember when Prince had a symbol?
Yeah.
And then he went back to being just called Prince, and then he was the artist formerly known as Prince after the symbol? Maybe if they just had, like, a neutral symbol, like a, you know, like a stick with a snake in it or something like that.
Like a Jets symbol.
Yeah, like a Jets symbol is what I'm trying to say.
I think that would be a better symbol than the Jets, than the snake with a stick symbol that you suggested there, Ezzy. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290.
We got Zach from Toronto, Drew, in Toronto.
Let me just do my thing, and then we'll get to Zach in Toronto. We'll take your calls, take your tweets, take your emails, Twitter.
My wallet's gone.
Twitter.com/IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, www.IllegalCurve.com. Let's go to line one, Zach in Toronto. Zach, welcome back to the illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey now, guys.
Hey now.
Okay, guys, I got a question for you, then I have a follow-up question.
Two questions.
Do you guys ever remember, well, this is the impression I get from talking to people from Winnipeg, do you ever remember there ever being anything to do with a sports franchise or sports, you know, in the front office or a coaching hire or a signing in the Winnipeg sports community that has been universally praised and celebrated as the hiring of Chevy and Heisinger as the, Vice President of Hockey Operations?
Well, Zach, if I can jump in here, I don't...
You're on the show. You're allowed to jump in.
I don't remember when... I mean, John Paddock was a good GM, but I don't remember there being this much hype around the John Paddock signing. So, no, but I think the reason why the signing is being adopted so well in Winnipeg and around is because of the relationship that Cheval Dayoff had with Craig Heisinger dating back to, you know, a long time ago, and his success. And it just seems right that True North had him in mind, and he was the only guy on the list. But I have to agree with you. The fever pitch that's surrounded this announcement might be, I don't know, I don't want to say more than the name, but right now it's really huge in the city.
There's a lot of goodwill that True North has, and I think they're capitalizing it, and it's going to continue. Although for entertainment purposes, Remus suggested the Jeff Reinbold signing head coach announcement was met with the same level of enthusiasm.
But Zach, the thing is this, right? I mean, Drew said it off air earlier this week. This is the time, and we all approve of the hiring. This is the time, though, that the GM gets all the praise. Starting of the draft, that's when somebody's going to be second-guessing him, and then you get back into the regular mode of due to that. So right now is as the True North has goodwill built up, and he is a capable guy. But, yeah, the grace period probably lasts for 2 weeks.
This is the honeymoon right now.
You get a 2-week grace period, and then after that, that's when the armchair quarterbacks will start to come out of the woodwork if they feel as though they need to. So, I mean, for right now, it's working well for them, that's for sure. You had a follow-up, Zach?
Yeah, so given all that and what you guys just said was perfect because, you know, True North, everything they've done has turned to gold. They've built up all this goodwill. Everything they've done has been incredibly well prepared. It's been executed flawlessly. Everything they have done to date has been just magic.
No argument there.
How could they possibly just ruin all that and not call this team the Jets at this point?
Yeah, and that's the question everybody's is asking around here, Zach, and that is, you know, and the point's been made about other cities and wanting that old name back and, you know, taken to the team because there's not the name.
Well, we read that email from the guy who's a Wild season ticket holder, but he still believes that first and foremost they're the North Stars.
And guys, like they, you know, the second this announcement was done, they had the draft to 13 ready to go.
Yep.
Obviously, they had Chevy in mind, ready to go right afterwards. Mm-hmm. I'm just having a hard time believing that they don't have a name and a jersey ready.
Zach, I'm speculating here, but I think because there's been quite a bit of time for True North to think about this, not only, you know, in the previous months and years, but since they made their own announcement, I think we're going to see. This is my own opinion. This is not based on anything. I think we're gonna see a name. Where I think this team's gonna be called the Jets. I really do. I'm just based on what's happened with the amount of the petition and the public outcry. And like you said, they don't want to make a decision that isn't going to be accepted as gold or whatever you want. So I think they are gonna call this team the Jets. That's just my opinion.
I think they're going to end up calling them the Jets after they've seen the outcry for it to be the Jets, but I initially don't think that they were planning on it, and I think that could have something to do with why there's been this gap in time between the announcement that the team's coming back and then the name. But again, complete speculation. It could end up being, they could go with polar bears. They could go with anything else. You never know.
Well, I hope you guys are right, because, you know, a rose by any other name wouldn't smell as sweet.
So you're just stealing my Twitter lines now. Is that what you're doing? I said that on Twitter yesterday. You're just going to just steal them blatantly. Is that, is that how it's going to work? Just let me know so I'll prepare myself.
It's funny. I didn't know Drew was a slam poet.
Drew, nobody follows on Twitter.
Zach, thanks for the call.
Thanks, guys. Have a good show.
Yeah, appreciate it. Here's our good friend Zach. He calls in each and every week. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. If you want to talk about the hiring of Kevin Cheveldayoff as the general manager, if you want to talk about the name of the team, whatever's on your mind regarding the return of the NHL to Winnipeg, now's the time to call in. We'll hear from you, 780-1290. Always, you can email us, info@illegalcurve.com or on our Twitter page, @illegalcurve. I think I have a mouthful of marbles this morning or something.
Yeah, Drew, that's been a couple of gaffes by you.
I know. Apparently, we might have to change the name of the show and everything. I can't seem to spit it out of my mouth properly.
The thing
today
is, Drew, you have to say Illegal Curve, you know, 50 times during a show. So if you nail it 47 times, I mean, when I was hosting when you guys were in Minneapolis, I mean, Illegal Curve, there's three L's in that word, illegal. Three L's.
Nice.
Did you ever know that?
Are you going to be in the spelling bee next week?
Yeah.
That spelling bee is the most unbelievable.
I love parents watching the kids.
Yeah.
Like the kid's really nervous and she's spelling, and the mom's even more nervous for this 12-year-old kid to spell some word nobody's ever going to use or has ever heard of.
I honestly don't think that they should use those words. Like if you can't legitimately use it in a sentence, why is it a word in the spelling bee?
I'd like to see where are they now, like 15 years later. Yeah. Like, or is that kid like in a dark room, like just spelling words and like shaking and like, please don't make me spell any more words.
Actually, every time they hear the word that they missed on, they just collapse to the ground and have a seizure or something. But I mean, there was one word I got right. There was a Hebrew word that they used in the spelling bee, and I got one right.
You participated in at home by yourself?
I was watching it. Are you telling me you don't sit there and try and spell it along with them?
No, I just like to see when Onright makes fun of it on SportsCenter. I don't actually watch
Drew,
it.
What was the Hebrew word?
I don't remember what it was. That's what I'm trying to think about right now. But I was like, hey, I got that word right. I was very proud of myself.
Hamburger.
Yes, hamburger. Thank you. I know how to spell hamburger.
We need to get Rabbi on the line right now.
Yeah, it's okay. We don't.
Okay, boys, let's focus on Andrew Ladd here. We were talking about Andrew Ladd last year. Just to break it down for our listeners, that was a really good segue. For our listeners, Andrew Ladd last year had his most productive offensive season. That was for the Thrashers, posting 59 points in about 81 games. Okay.
Okay.
Good numbers. I mean, it's not a 60-point season. Good numbers. Good player. 29 of those are goals. So I mean, goals. You're weighing goals and assists equally. People usually don't, and they shouldn't. He has the same, you know, 29 goals, 30 assists, okay?
Yeah.
He logged about over 20 minutes a game, so he took a bigger role than they had in Chicago. In Chicago, a bunch of guys were ahead of him, whether it be Sharp, Kane, Taves, Hossa, you know, as good of a player as Andrew Ladd is, he's not better than those guys, right? So they ended up trading him, okay? So he went from playing, you know, third-line minutes, limited power play time in Chicago to Atlanta, where he logged more power play time and was playing big even streak minutes, okay?
Okay.
Now, he went there, so when you play more time and you're a pretty good offensive player, you're generally going to produce more offense, right? Because more time generally equals more opportunity for points.
I would agree with your analysis so far.
Okay, so you know he's last year, so 2 years ago when he was on Chicago, he produced 2.10 points per 60 minutes of ice, even strength ice time. Now that's hard to conceptualize. People haven't really heard of that, but you know if you take your even strength ice time, put it over a 60 minute average. He was playing more, and his offensive and his even strength rate in Chicago was 2.11. Now, part of that is because, Drew, as a third-line player in Chicago, you're playing against the other team's lower defensemen because they're matching their best defensemen up against Kane and up against Taves, okay? So, and he played limited time. In Atlanta, his ice time went up. His offensive numbers, simple offensive numbers like goals, assists, and points went up, but his overall efficiency went down a bit to 1.85. Okay, per 60 minutes. So what I'm saying is, just so people understand, he went from basically a top 9 forward to a top 6 forward, was given more opportunity, but within the ice time, produced a little bit less because he was playing against the other team's best defenseman last year every night. So he had more ice time, more opportunity, but the quality of competition he was playing against was better.
So Richie, you're to use an analogy, you're saying don't look at his numbers in Chicago and his numbers in Atlanta and compare apples to apples.
That's right. That's
exactly. This is apples and oranges. That's and right. Don't just look at goals, assists, and points because that's right. Just like, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, as far as, you know, we were talking about Roberto Luongo earlier, and the fact is, in Vancouver, he's got, you know, 37 to 45 wins every year, and he gets it done, and he gets the win. So who cares if his save percentage is 915 or 930? And in this point, to that point, you know, Ladd got 59 points, and the year before he might have got 40 points. So, you know, the fact is, his as far as I'm concerned, Ladd's value is not just in he's a 55 or 45 or 60 point guy. Andrew Ladd is an extremely talented skater. He brings a physical dimension. He's a leader, and he's 25 years old, and he has two Stanley Cups already on two different teams. I don't know how many guys in the NHL have had two Stanley Cups at the age of 25 with two different teams, but there's not a lot. And the guy's a winner. He's very good in the dressing room, Richie, dating back. He was on the junior team in 2005. Was it 2005 in Grand Forks? I think or maybe a little bit earlier, maybe 04,
he won 03. The cup with Carolina.
So it was maybe 04.
Might have been on that team, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, the guy has... talk about consistency. Andrew Ladd, you know what you're going to... You're not going to get a bad effort out of Andrew Ladd, Drew. And the thing is, on Chicago, he was playing on a little bit on the second line, but more what Richie was talking about. He was on the third line of Chicago. But remember last year, nobody's third line was better than Chicago's last year. I mean, Chicago had depth all through.
2 years ago, yeah. 2 years ago.
Pardon me, two years ago, yeah. I mean, what Richie's getting at more, I'll let Richie continue, but as far as his contract goes, I don't think people should expect Ladd to be a consistent 60 to 80 point guy. This guy's going to be more in the 50 to 60 point range.
And the problem is, are you paying him based... You want me to go after next?
I was going
to
say, when we come back, let's talk numbers and what you think Andrew Ladd should get paid. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive. They make the car you drive drive forever.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, where off air we continued our debate as to whether if the Moose used that as an intro song or the Jets used that as an intro song. I don't remember anything other than Jump, but Richie, you seem to be insistent that they use that.
Either way, it's a great song. It's great, 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 great.
I'm pretty sure we decided a few years ago that I think they were using the Jets were using Two Unlimited at the end of their run,
it wasn't Jump, yeah.
It wasn't Jump. I think. Who knows?
I don't know. It's different, so who knows. Anyways, welcome back. Let's continue on our conversation about the Andrew Ladd contract terms.
Okay. Want to keep going?
You're chomping at the bit, so who am I to stand in your way?
Champing, not chomping.
Champing?
Champing, you know that?
Really?
Yeah.
It's not chomping?
No.
I'm not sure about that.
Do you say champing or chomping when it's not followed by
at
the bit? Never.
I think it's chomping.
It's champing, but do you want to Google it while I'm going
over the ladder?
Maybe
it's spelled champing and you say chomping.
No, it's champing.
Really? Yeah. What does champing mean?
It's a good healthy discussion.
I don't know, Drew, but that's what the correct pronunciation is, I believe. With the name.
Okay, we'll find that out. You continue on with your discussion. I'll see if I can find that out.
In a simplistic view, Drew, and this is a fairly simple breakdown, Kevin should have a day off, and the crew will probably be doing a more in-depth breakdown. I can assure you of that. But Andrew Ladd, in terms of overall production, okay? I talked about his production at even strength for 60 minutes now. Obviously, power play is a factor, and many other things are a factor to offensive contribution. But I quoted the number 1.85, you know, his average points per 60 minutes at even strength, you know, 5-on-5 play, okay? What 1.85 ended up putting him 131st in the league in terms of ranking, you know, amongst a group of people who play 30 games or more, okay? Now, 131 is he. Let's do simple math. Three guys are on a top line, first liners, okay? There's 30 teams. That's 90 first-liners in the National Hockey League, okay?
Yeah.
And he's 131. So that's 41, that's 41 spots below 90, which is essentially if 90 players would be the first group of first-liners, then 90 would be the first group of second-liners, right? Yeah. And he's 41. And just another way of basically saying, Andrew Ladd's a second-line forward in the National Hockey League.
And you have to look at
but don't pay him like a first-line forward.
Yeah, and Rich, you have to think that this our team, Winnipeg, the former Thrashers, going ahead, there's tons of work to be done with this team as far as who's going to come the first line. But you have to imagine
Evander Kane.
Yeah, Evander Kane is going to get the spot. Evander Kane's a left winger, and Andrew Ladd's a left winger. Am I correct?
They're both left wingers. Yes.
Both left wingers. So Evander Kane is more offensively talented, and very young. But you're right. I mean, Andrew Ladd is going to be a second liner who can fill the role of a first liner, but he's not offensively gifted enough to be a bona fide. Yeah. So you're right. Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. So my point is, guys, when you're paying, this is the problem a team's got into. They were paying guys third line money. You know, when Chicago would sign Marty Lapointe, guys who were third line players, you're paying those guys big money. Where's the money for your top defensemen and your top forwards? And that's what you get worried about. The teams that generally have trouble with the cap, see Calgary, for example, they pay a bunch of third line guys second line money. After a while, you have no room to sign your best players. You know, when Camilleri came up,
They lost them.
Where's the room for it? I mean, where's the room for your top players? So my concern, Andrew Ladd is a top six forward, and you want to keep guys like that. But you pay a second-line left winger, first-line left winger money. Well, when your first-line left winger comes into town, either he's taking a pay cut or somebody else is taking a pay cut. Because remember, in the cap system, even if you have a self-imposed cap, like Winnipeg probably will, within the locker room, one player's getting more money. That means the other guy probably isn't.
Right. It's especially, I mean, in the salary cap system, you run into troubles when you pay players over their worth. I mean, you can't pay a third line player second line money and a second line player first line money. You just can't. It's not feasible, and it's a recipe for disaster. Exactly like you used the Calgary example. Calgary, at best, might get into an eighth playoff spot. That's their ceiling, and they have no flexibility at all, because of the moves that Daryl Sutter made over the last number of seasons.
Yeah, and he's not changing anytime soon.
He handcuffed that team.
Yep.
I mean, that's why he's no longer the general manager.
Yeah.
You know, he had the, you know, it just doesn't work. It's what leads to disaster. It's what leads to constant, you know, middling performances. You know, if you're satisfied just making the playoffs in an eighth spot, fine, but that's not going to be good enough for most real hockey fans.
Let's take a topical analysis here, Drew.
Okay.
Let's look at the New York Rangers.
Okay. Well, usually a team that mismanages the cap.
No, but they've been better lately, but let's look at the New York Rangers and let's look at Chris Drury. Okay?
Yeah.
Chris Drury is going to be bought out. His cap, his cap hit this year is, I think it's 7.05, something of that sort. But let's just go over Chris Drury's career numbers. What were you paying Chris Drury for?
I don't believe he had anything higher than a 70-point season.
You're paying him for 1 year in Buffalo.
But you're paying him for, quote-unquote, intangibles.
Leadership.
Big
yep.
goals. He needs leadership. To play on a team that's good enough to get him the opportunity to play big goals. He's not good enough on his own. I mean, he played in Colorado with Sakic and Forsberg and
yep.
those guys. And obviously, he was very good in Buffalo. Injuries have taken their toll on him. I mean, he had a short stint in Calgary. But overall, you look at his career numbers, guys, and this is what I'm talking about, okay? You look at his career numbers, and they're not that good. So you're paying a guy who's not a first-liner first-line money. Chris Drury's career high in terms of points is 69 with the Sabres in 06-07.
Pretty close.
He's more like a 58-point player in, you know, 53, 53, yep. 67, 69, 58, 56. He's about a 50, 55-point player. I'm not suggesting that they're going to pay Andrew Ladd $7 million by any means. But Chris Drury is not a first-line player for the most part. You don't want to pay him like one because he's not giving you that production.
You're not even paying him like a first-line player at $7 million. You're paying him like
a franchise
an elite player.
It's the point. So I think the best comparable when analyzing Andrew Ladd's worth to this franchise is Dustin Brown,
the Los Angeles Kings captain.
He's 26 years old. Ladd's 25, okay? Dustin Brown is signed for the next 3 years at $3.175 million. That's a pretty good deal. Winnipeg's not going to get Ladd for that cheap. But this is the point. Both rugged players, both go to the net, both captains of their teams. They're both similar type of players. Brown's a little bit better of a skater. Brown draws a ton of penalties. Ladd's
physical
great.
Players.
Physical players yeah. will go to the net, good hands. Goal scorers more than passers. That's why, you know, you take that number, that for the next 3 years they have Brown signed at 3.175. Well, if Brown's 3.175, Drew, I don't think you'd pay Ladd four.
So if True North will come with a comparison of Dustin Brown at 3.175.
Right. That's right.
What are Andrew Ladd and his representatives going to come as a comparison to?
I'll let Richie jump in here, but I would say that, you know, I would have to throw in the two cups. He's got the two cups, but you don't factor that in too much. Two cups doesn't give you an extra $2 million a year. When you're talking about cap, I mean, that's maybe what Ladd has on his resume that Brown doesn't. But as far as the comparables, it's a very good analogy. I mean, those guys are very close in age, very close in point production totals, Drew. So you have to think that what Richie's saying is a little bit accurate. You have to think that he's somewhere in the, I mean, and numbers are important here, guys, for all of the fans of this team. This is going to be important because moving ahead, You give Ladd a little bit too much money, you're going to have trouble signing Bogosian and Kane, right?
Well, you got to sign Bogosian this year. He's an RFA.
That's right.
I mean, so you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, Richie.
Yeah.
You're talking to Andrew Ladd's representatives. Mm-hmm. You start with the Dustin Brown comparison at 3.175.
I would be pretty steadfast with that comparison. I wouldn't want to waver too much. Now, I put in terms of when the deal is signed and needing to sign him, and I think there's a significance to the signing in that it's symbolic. He's your leader.
Yep.
He's a captain. He came to town.
It's your first big signing.
Don't get me wrong. Andrew Ladd wants to be a member of the Winnipeg team, but it didn't exactly hurt his... I wouldn't be shocked. I'm not putting... This is not in a bad way, but I wouldn't be shocked if his agent said, you know what? It wouldn't hurt your marketability and your negotiating power to go into Winnipeg and look like you're really interested. And he might be interested, but a good agent would have told him to go.
Yeah.
It's doing his job. You're increasing his market value.
But he came here to show his interest. But what I sort of found interesting about that is he wasn't over-the-top effusive in his praise. He wasn't going to say he wasn't going to give him a hometown discount or not a hometown discount.
Of course he was.
He wasn't going to get a discount, but he was there to prove that he wanted to be here, and you know he puts him front and center so that there's a little bit of pressure on True North as being okay. Well,
that's right.
He came. He was the first guy here. He wants to be here. Now you guys have to go out and make it happen.
Exactly right.
I
just want to chip in here because I mean it's fun to do a capology analysis. Richie's obviously a lot more accurate in his decision making analysis. But I have to say that based on that comparison and the fact that he's a leader and he's the captain, I would say $3.5 million a year is a number I'm comfortable with.
Richie, throw a number out there. Throw your absolute top maximum number.
Oh, I wouldn't go above $3.6 million per year on about a 3-year deal.
Yeah, so we're close.
So you guys are both saying about 3 years, $11 million bucks or so, $11 million.
Right there. Yeah.
Okay, that's
reasonable. If they go with four, Drew, might as from a capology standpoint, might be a little bit high.
Yeah.
But would we be surprised though, Richie, if they gave him $4 million a year, or four and a half? I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying they will or should do it.
4 years, you said?
For like $3.5 to $4.5 million a year, because I mean, based on his Stanley Cup resume.
Remember,
and all
guys
that
are on RFA contracts, they generally get their highest years at the end, only because you have to qualify them. So they get qualified at the equal price, which is, say, for example, Ladd was younger, you'd want his salary to increase, so the last year he would get qualified at the highest amount possible. But Ladd's now being taken into his UFA years, so they can structure it however they want.
Right? Yeah. But if you're going to buy out his UFA years or some of his UFA years, then you're going to have to pay a little bit more for those.
That's right.
So we'll see what happens.
Champing is the original form. It is still currently endorsed as the only correct form by the Associated Press and others. Chomping may be considered correct now because of its over-misuse.
Well, look who's the man.
Looky.
Exactly. A smart man, that Richard Pollock. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, General Manager Kevin Cheveldayoff. You're on 1290 Sports Radio.